There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rippin', rippin'.
Hey, everybody. This is Jordan. Another episode of the Member Guest Podcast with my now LA golf partner and friend. I'm going to try and say it, Brandon. Let me know how good I do. Brandon Kiwal Ramani.
Perfect. You killed
Actually, like 10 out of 10?
Yeah, I was spot on. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome. Can't wait.
Yeah, man. It's been, I don't know, a couple months since we last played. And when you and I talked out in, or was it like Simi Valley? Isn't that where you live?
Yeah.
Simi Valley.
Yeah. Simi Valley.
Do you watch the real bros of Simi Valley? Does anybody here watch that?
It's so good.
I have. Everyone's seen it and it's crazy. Like I'll be playing in Arizona and I'll be like, yeah, I'm from Simi Valley. And the first thing someone says is like, oh, like the real bros of Simi Valley.
Dude, those guys are hilarious.
That is absolutely right.
It's awesome. I heard Bob Does Sports is from Simi Valley too. I don't know if anybody knew that.
Yeah, now he's huge and he plays everywhere. But when he first, his first videos were at Moore Park Country Club, which is like 10 minutes from where Jordan and I played down the street.
No way.
Unreal.
It's awesome. Small world.
Yeah.
He's what, 6'6", right, Andy?
No. Jordan was like in our last podcast, he was like, yeah, Bob Does Sports is like 6'5". And we just Googled it and he's not.
He's like
6'5". He's like 5'10".
Dude, I asked my buddy. He said like, we were on a slope. That's what it was. So Brandon, you reached out to us and then you and I connected and played. So really we just want to talk about like, you know, somebody like you who, you know, played in college, obviously elite player and now trying to make it and kind of what that life and what that journey is like. I think a lot of people say like, yeah, I really want to golf or I would love to do that for a living. And those guys got it like so awesome. And you and I are talking and like, it can be a grind, right? A lot of travel, you know, you're paying your own way to do a lot of different stuff. And so, you know, maybe just give the audience a little bit about your background, know that you went to Boston College, what you do now, and then we'll kind of get into, you know, what a day in the life is like and what you do to, you know, really, you know, try and take your game to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. You said it right on. I mean, the grind is real when it comes to pro golf, and everyone is, you know, the first thing they say is, I'm so jealous, like, I would love to play golf every day for a living. And don't get me wrong, I love it. Right now, a little bit about me. Graduated from Boston College December of 2021, turned pro January of 2022. I have recently earned full status on the Pro Golf Tour. It's a satellite tour out in Europe, and they are a feeder tour to the DP World Tour. The best way to explain it for guys here in the U.S., it's the equivalent to PGA Tour Canada or PGA Tour Latin America, but for the DP World Tour, set up the exact same way in which top five on the money list at the end of the season moves up to their challenge tour, which is the same as Korn Ferry, and then 6 through 10 get conditional status. And then they have a Q school at the end of the year, just like the Korn Ferry Tour does. So very similar, but on the other side of the pond.
So how many, you know, tournaments do you play? Is it like weekly like they do here? Are you playing in qualifiers or what's it like? Kind of what's the schedule like, if you will?
So out there, the DP World Tour and the Challenge Tour do not have any sort of Monday qualifiers. So it's kind of like it's only for players who have status on the tours are able to play. It's not really like out here where you can go and have a good round and tee it up that same week. That being said, the tour that I'm on, I'm going to play around, I think, 13 events this season, and that's in a 4.5-5 month span. So it's a little slow to start, but then by end of June, you're playing like three weeks out of the month, back to back to back. And it's awesome. I mean, we'll touch in like what the kind of grind that comes with it, but I mean, it's a blast traveling Europe. I mean, you're hitting like Munich and then you go to Prague and then you go to Poland and then you go to back to Vienna, and it's beautiful and
Dude, no kidding.
it's awesome. But at the same time, it it can take a toll on you when you're, you know, you play 5 days of golf in a row and then you got to drive 7 hours and then you got 2 days of practice round and then you got to tee it up again. So it really gave me kind of like, I played a couple events last year. I didn't have status, but I was able to get a couple starts and they were back to back to back weeks. And it gave me a better understanding of what the guys on tour do and what they go through. And it's not easy, especially if you're not playing great. It can be like, you know, you just want a week off to figure it out or have a couple days in the range to figure it out. But that's not sometimes the luxury you have. You kind of have to go out there and what you have the week is what you got. And hopefully it's good enough to contend. And if it's not, you know, go at it again the next week.
Yeah. So like, I mean, on the kind of practice and grind front, like, especially when you're overseas, I mean, are you like in different hotels or cities every week or how does that work? Like, you know, you don't have a club to go back to and just like grind, right? You know, you're overseas and you're going from city to city. So are you just in hotels?
Yeah, exactly. So, Airbnbs or hotels, fortunately, you know, if you're okay, like not staying at the nicest places, I mean, by no means are they bad, but you know, you can get like 65, 70 bucks a night in an Airbnb, like apartment or small house, like one bed, two bed, bath and a small kitchen. And yeah, I mean, if I've got 3 weeks in a row this season, I'm going from town to town. And in that situation, you would just show up to the course that the tournament is playing at and just practice and play there. The courses they play always have good facilities, you know, great putting green, range, short game area. So you're able to work on it there. And then if I've got a couple weeks off, I've got some family in the Northeast that I'm going to, you know, stay in Boston area, practice there. And I've been going to school in Boston College. Fortunately, I've got some connections to some clubs there that, you know, if I have 3 weeks off, I can go there and practice a little bit and then come back. But for the most part, yeah, it's you just show up to the wherever the next tournament is and get your work in
go
there.
Go well. And like when you're showing up, you know, we talked a little bit about Decade. And I think I told you we have Fawcett coming on the pod, which would be really sweet. Like you taught me a lot about it. But like, do you have caddies when you're playing in these rounds or are you solely by yourself, you know, using the data that you got from either Decade Golf or just research that you're doing online about the courses? Because I imagine sometimes you show up to these courses and you have close to no idea what they're like, right, until you practice them before you play them. So what's that process like?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'm a big fan of Decade Golf and Scott Fawcett, and I paid for his program, and I love it. I can't say enough good things about it. And you can kind of see a lot more pros now are kind of opening up saying like, yeah, I use some sort of Decade or something similar to what he teaches. So, you guys are going to have a great time talking with him next week. He's a really, really smart guy. Touching up on what you asked, Decade comes in, within the app comes with something called a driving target. And it's essentially Google Earth in the app. And then you can plug in kind of how far you hit your driver, you know, total rollout. What I do is I put in my carry as well, and then how far I hit like my 3-wood or 2-iron for that week. And you can, it overlays it so that you can see like, okay, this bunker, I can carry that bunker on this line. And then it also, he'll obviously do a way better job explaining it, but he explains like the average pro or one of the better ball strikers on tour has around a 70-yard wide dispersion with your driver. And so you can plug that into Decade and it'll give you a 70-yard wide parameter. Wow. And so you kind of drag that around the hole and say, okay, like if I aim here, I've got more than 70 yards between OB and hazard. So theoretically, if I aim here, it's going to take a really, really bad swing for me to put this ball out of play. Mm. And then it's like, okay, this hole kind of gets narrow. I've got less than 65 or 70 yards where my driver is going to be landing or rolling. This 3-wood take out some of the trouble. And if that's the case, then you check down to 3-wood. Ever since I started using Decade, I've become a big proponent of hit driver as often as you can. Unless driver is going to reach a hazard that 3-wood takes out of play, like if there's a hazard 310 out and you're like, your driver might get there, then hit 3-wood. But in every other case, like just hit driver. Like there's no reason not to. And he said this in one of his videos on Decade, but he's like, once you kind of get used to it, practice rounds, it takes you only a couple holes to kind of get used to how firm the greens are. And then it's really like, okay, does this green have like a crazy false front or like something crazy going on with this green that I need to figure out? But I mean, after that, you really only need to play each hole once because you already know where the ball, where you should be hitting it off the tee with what club. And then with your pro shot, if you're using the decade method, theoretically, you're never really going to get into a lot of trouble with your pro shots. So it all comes down to like having really good speed control for that week. And that's something that I've been working on a lot this offseason, is just having really good speed control. I used to think like, oh, speed control, like week to week green speed changes. So there's not really a point in like practicing lag putting on your home course. But the more that I practice that, I realized that it's almost like a skill, just like anything else, like in being a good driver of the ball or being a good short game player, it lag putting is a skill. So it, while the green speed changes week to week, your ability to adapt and how quickly you can adapt to that change in speed will dictate how well your lag putting is that week.
Yeah, Brandon, and it's Andy here. And I had seen some really interesting stuff too, and just kind of philosophy around putting and making birdies and, you know, just lagging the thing up by the hole. And if it goes in, it goes in, right? And I know there's a lot of research around how big the hole is, if it's at drip speed versus, you know, the hole gets sort of smaller. Maybe talk to us a little bit about just your approach. I mean, professional golf, you know, it's got to feel like you got to go out and go low and shoot scores in these tournaments. Have you found more patience from using the decade system and kind of your mental game? Would love to hear a little bit about your mental game.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially like in multi-day events, if you've got like a bigger field, 156 players, if you're in the afternoon wave, you might check the scores right before you go off and see some dude shot 9 under and you're like, oh my God, like I have to go out there and shoot 9 under, right? It's like, I'm already 9 back and I haven't even hit a ball yet. But what you realize over time is like, yeah, he shot 9 under that day, but over a 3-day or 4-day tournament, like the winning score may be like 12 under, which is 4 under a day, because while he might shoot 9 under the first day, he's like the law of averages, he can't continuously shoot 9 under. Like my dad, he's a golf coach. He coached at UCLA for a couple of years and then some guys on tour in the early mid 2000s. And what he always said was, he's like, your handicap is going to kick in. Like if you're an 8 handicap and you're 4 under through 12, like there is a double and triple like looming, because it's just, it has to happen. And if you're a +4 and you're 1 over through 9, like stay patient because like your birdies are coming. And decade kind of puts that like in perspective in terms of like, and I'm losing track of the question. I know you asked about like speed on the greens, but outside of 15 feet, I'm just trying to two putt. Like I'm just trying to have perfect speed. And if the hole gets in the way, like that's awesome. It's funny, like back in February, I did the pre-qualifier for the Farmers and I had one of my best friends on the bag with me. And I've known this guy forever. And I explained to him the night before, I was like, we're in a decade, like this is something I just started doing. And outside of 15 feet, like we're just gonna lag it, right? And through like 16 or 17 holes, I had a really good round going. We come to 18, I got like a 25-foot downhill slider for birdie. And at the time I was in the number and hit a great putt, like just came up just like an inch short, like tap in par. And he was like, man, like, I really wish you would have gotten that one to the hole, because like that birdie would have gotten us in for sure. And I was like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, but if that goes 4 feet by and I miss, like
that miss takes me out.
Like, yeah, like that. So luckily like that par was good enough to get me in, but like, that's kind of like the mindset adjustment. It takes time, right? Cause everyone wants to make the putt. And when you're playing with your buddies, you leave something short, like, oh, like 100% of the putts you leave short don't go in. It's like, yeah, that's awesome. But also if I'm 6 inches short, like I'm never 3 putting, you know? So like I'm okay leaving a 30-foot putt a foot short, because that means I'm taking 3 putt out of the equation. And you see that a lot, like inside of 8 feet, inside of 4 feet, like some guys hit it really firm. Like they'll just play like a 4-footer straight and hit it firm. And like eventually they're going to have like a hard lip out, or eventually like it's not going to go in and they're going to have another 4-footer coming back. So for me, like, I always like having really good speed, because like you said, the better your speed is as it comes to the hole, the bigger the hole is. And it's like, if I can eliminate having to have a stressful putt coming back and I get to maximize the size of the hole, there is no reason to take out some break and play more firm or play more aggressively.
Brandon, this is Tony. Really do appreciate you coming on, man. And my question that I'm going to kind of go with is shifting gears a little bit from away from, you know, the decade strategy, but to just simply why you're playing in Europe versus trying to get on, say, like PGA Tour Canada or Latino America or something along those lines. Obviously, being from California and having played in the ACC, I mean, you've faced a lot of these guys that are playing on these tours, and I'm sure that you know that you can play with them. What led you to going to Europe and kind of trying to go through that path versus playing in North America?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of like a longer explanation, but it boils down to, like, I just feel like the way that Europe is structured, they make it a little bit easier for you to get onto a tour. And what I mean by that is, like, right now, PGA Tour Canada Q School is going on. The last stage of the last section is playing right now in California. So there's 140 guys in the field for 10 spots. Like, top 10 gets status in the tour, and then anything out, like 11 through 30 gets conditional status. But I know some guys that came like 15th and got one start. So if you take that approach, now you go out there, you play, you have a really good week, but, you know, you come 20th and you miss it by two shots. Okay, now I've got to wait until August, September for Korn Ferry Q School. So now I've got like 4 to 5 months to figure out like what I'm going to do. And that usually ends up being like mini tour golf, which can get really, really expensive. Like, for example, there are a couple tours out here on the West Coast. It's like a 3-day tournament. It's like $13.95 if you're not a member of the tour. And it's like, that's before hotel and gas and rent a car, if you can rent a car or flight, something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
so that adds up pretty quick. And then,
sorry for interrupting you. I apologize.
No worries.
I was just gonna say, we have the tour, like the Dakotas Tour is like another tour that plays around all over North and South Dakota, or, you know, there's tours that are in Florida, or there's tours that are across Texas or whatever it may be. It's interesting because, you know, you've heard of people that have tried to go through that path, and like you described, it gets real expensive really quickly if you don't win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the times, like a good week is like making like a small profit or breaking even at the end of the day, because it's so top heavy that like the winner may make a lot of money, but coming in like sixth place or seventh place is making you a small profit. And so, and what my issue with that, like when I thought about it, was like, I could play great in mini tour events, but that's not getting me to a higher tour. Like at the end of the day, like I'm in the same spot that I was at the start of the week. Mm-hmm. I just made like a little bit bigger return on my investment, because mini tour events, they're great to stay sharp. They're great to, you know, test what you've been working on, but they're an organized money game at the end of the day. So then now after 5 months of that, you might do some Monday qualifiers, some pre-qualifiers, traveling the U.S. Now you're in August, September for Korn Ferry Q School. If you have to start at pre-Q, you've got to go through four stages, you know, pre-Q, first, second, third stage. Entry fee alone right there, like if you make it to second stage, you're in for like 7,500, I think, like between $7,000 and $8,000. This year, it's going to be even more because final stage offers 5 tour cards, so they have the ability to charge a little bit more. And then if you miss it by one there, or you just like have one bad day, like, all right, now you're like, you're back to the drawing board. You got to wait until November for Latin Q School. And then it's back to the same thing where it's like top 10 out of 130 guys. And where you blink and a whole year has gone by, and now you're prepping for Canada Q School all over again, you know? And you're like, well, I have four, you essentially have 3 events a year to really show up. And if you don't show up, you're back to the drawing board. And I know some guys, like I was looking at some players this week that are playing in Canada. I'm like, how is this dude like trying to get Canada status? He's played in like 20 Korn Ferry events in his career, a handful of PGA Tour events. Like he wins every year, is like in top 3 in every mini tour event that he plays in his area. And you're telling me this dude's like doesn't have status anywhere. you know, and he's in his late 20s, maybe even early 30s, and you can only do it for so long before you're like, you know what, like maybe this isn't for me. And I think there's a lot of guys that burn out going that route, and they're great players. So for me, I was like, you know what, let's go try out Europe. Like at the end of the day, worst thing that happens is I get to travel Europe for like a couple weeks. Like that's not a bad way to spend, you know, the end of the summer.
Cool.
Really enjoy the tournaments, like really enjoy the guys that are out there. Q School offers a little bit more spots and the entry fee wasn't that bad. And, you know, I was like, you know what, let's go out there and try it. Played well and earned full status. And so I feel like the ability now this season to play 13, 14 events, like that I'm locked in, that I know I'm going to play, not have to worry, like, am I going to get in or like, where's my next event? And then on top of that, if I play well, that gives me the opportunity to move up to a higher tour. And I think that at the end of the day is the most valuable thing, is giving you an opportunity to move up. And I think whether I get status on the challenge tour or not, I know I'm going to be in a way better position having played those 14 events than I would have been if I had played, you know, 1 minute tour event a month here in the West Coast.
I mean, that's a really, really awesome way to look at it. And, out of curiosity, like what was the process to, you know, go to the qualifier for that? Did you have to have status somewhere else, or did you have to play in a pre-qualifier to get on the tour you're qualified for, or is it just like, hey, show up, pay this small entry fee, if you qualify, good for you, you're on the tour?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was it's very similar to like how Canada's set up, except it's a little bit cheaper and they give a little bit more spots. And they have like a little bit smaller field. So like just from a numbers standpoint, it's like I already have a better, you know, like chance of getting in here. And like you kind of like see what the scores are like, and you're like, okay, like if I play solid, like it shouldn't be an issue. And they give more conditional spots, and the conditional status goes further. Like conditional for Canada might get you into one event, maybe two. Conditional status out there is going to get you into like 75% of the events. And so like for me, that was a big difference maker too. It's like, even if I don't earn full status, like I'm still going to get a chance to play a lot of events. And then if I do play well in those events, I get to reshuffle up. And for me, it just made a little bit more sense. And then like, I mean, you have to fly out there, but once you're out there, like things aren't really ain't really that expensive. Or so at the end of the day, like price wise, if I compared it to a full season of doing like mini tour events, Monday qualifiers, and Corn Ferry Q School at the end of the year, plus like one Canada or Latin Q School, the money was like about the same, maybe like a couple grand more expensive going to Europe. But at least I get to play in events every week. And like, if I play well, I'm going to make the money back. And also the opportunity to move up to the challenge tour where the money is way better. And now you're playing against way better guys. There's way more exposure in terms of brands. And then, you know, you're one good year away from playing on the DP World Tour. And now that the PGA Tour owns 40% of the DP World Tour, they're giving PGA Tour starts to guys on the DP World Tour. So, you know, in a couple of years, if you're playing out in Europe, you are also getting starts. Granted, they're not in the big PGA Tour events, but you are still getting starts in the PGA Tour. And I talked to my buddy about it. It's like, if my pro golf career ends up me being traveling Europe for like 5 years, like playing golf, like there's a lot of worse ways to make a living.
You're totally right. And this is a good segue into the first question that I have for you. You're just talking about experiences and how you're approaching golf courses. And I love the way that you dissect it. I'm curious to also kind of flip the script a little bit and speak for some of the weekend warriors and amateurs out here that listen to the podcast. When you're approaching tournaments, you know, like you mentioned, you get to go across the pond and play some incredible courses. I can only imagine how beautiful they are. Are you able to still somewhat enjoy new courses when you go and play them, as far as, you know, scenery, environment, hang, or are you more just tunnel vision the entire time? Like, hey, hit my ball here. I'm not looking at anything else besides where I'm going to hit my ball next. Like, are you fully kind of just ignoring everything besides each shot that you're hitting? Or do you feel like you're still somewhat able to enjoy the experience of, you know, going to a new place and playing golf there, like someone like myself would, you know, where it's just more of an experiential thing? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I definitely am the type of guy who like tries to soak it all in, because it's one of those things where like, yeah, if you miss a short putt or like you three putt and you're upset, you're like, you know, we're all the way out here in Europe, like, and what are we doing, like making silly mistakes like that? But then at the end of the day, it's like look around, like take 2 seconds to look around. So I think the tunnel vision happens like when I'm 15 yards out from my golf ball, and then I get into my routine of getting the numbers, like, all right, where do I want to hit the ball? Where do I, like, you know, stuff like that. And then once I hit the shot, it's kind of like whatever the result was, it's kind of like resetting and going back to, you know, just kind of enjoying where you are, and then you get back to where your next shot is. And that kind of just makes it more fun too, because at the end of the day, like, you hear these stories of guys that are pros that are a little bit older, and they're like, I lost the love of the game because it turned into a job. Right. So I'm trying my best to just be like, hey, at the end of the day, it's a game. It's a really frustrating game. It's a really hard game, but it's an amazing game. And you get a chance to, you know, have the opportunity to play it for a living. And if you start playing some good golf at the right time, like, that is something that, like, I've always dreamt about and a possibility for it to come true. So, you know, just try to have that mindset and see where it takes you and see where the season goes.
I love that. That's a great perspective. And just to somewhat elaborate on that, I'd be curious to know, because we've talked about mental game a little bit on the podcast so far. Is there anyone that you've worked with or any groups in particular that you've worked with on your mental game specifically, and how you're approaching the game, how you're dealing with adversity? Or is that something you've kind of just taken upon yourself and you know, yourself as a player to say, hey, this is what I need to do, this is how I'm going to do it? Or have you received any coaching on anything like that?
I think this off season, I've come a long way of understanding, like, expectation management when it comes to golf. And then one thing is, in I started meditation, an app. It's like the Sam Harris meditation app, and it's like 10 minutes a day. Like, it's nothing like crazy, but it kind of just, it starts your day off right. It kind of resets you, and if you hit a bad shot out there, it gives you kind of the steps and, like, the what to do to kind of reset your mind. But I think expectation management also goes a long way. Like, if I'm hitting balls in the range in college, if I, like, missed a shot by a little bit with, like, a 6-iron, I'd start freaking out and be like, oh my God, like, what's going on? Like, get the video out, get the TrackMan out, like, what is happening? And then, like, you realize, well, like, it's a 6-iron. Like, you're not going to, like, hit it exactly where you want to hit it every time. And on top of that, if you're using Decade, you don't want to hit it exactly where you're aimed every single time, because Decade accounts for misses. And, like, maybe that small draw that you hit is actually, like, going to be 5 feet, you know? And so, or maybe that, like, small push is going to, like, put you in a better spot than, like, having pulled it would have been. So for me, it's like, now when I'm on the range, I'm working on technicals. And then when I stop working on technicals and I just try to see the ball flight, if I miss, as long as it's not off the planet, it's like, you know what? Where's the next ball? Like, let's just keep it going.
Love that. That's an awesome perspective. And I love that you're practicing mindfulness, because mindfulness and meditation kind of go hand in hand with golf, don't they? Because if you're not present for one moment, that's the difference maker. So good on you. And
the old John Rahm be a goldfish. That's all over the internet right now from Ted Lasso show. So BK, like, when I first met you, one of the things that struck me, I told these guys, like, you got such a good head on your shoulders, right? Like, you need to have that, especially when you're going to be an aspiring golfer. And you mentioned, like, right when we first started, you've come a long way since you and I last played. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, and we did an episode on this, like, who our sponsors would be. Like, what, like, that's obviously a part of it, right? Like, trying to find brands and sponsors. And I love the hat, by the way. I don't know who got you that, but it's pretty nails.
It's a great hat. I wear it a lot.
What kind of sponsors or brands do you talk to, like, at this level, or what are those conversations like, right? Because we watch the PGA Tour every weekend, and they're sponsored by, you know, Audemars Piguet and all these, like, you know, cool watch brands, or Delta, or all the massive ones. Like, what is it at your level, and who do you see guys, you know, sponsored by? They're really, like, local shops or companies, or what is it?
Yeah, I mean, another great question. For me, I'm still, like, on the early stages of it, because I haven't played a full season on a tour, and this will be my first season on a tour. So I'm excited to see, especially if I have a good season, what doors that opens. Because obviously the better you play, especially, like, out in Europe, if you're playing well, there will be European brands that I haven't had the opportunity to connect with that might start a conversation or open a door. Currently, like, when it comes to equipment, Titleist and TaylorMade have a great pro program, in which they give, like, pretty big discounts or free gear, depending on, like, how much you want or how much you need. And then when it comes to, like, financial monetary, like, honestly, it's a lot of just word of mouth, which is, like, kind of hard to explain. Like, I had the opportunity to go to a high school that's like very well connected here in LA. And like you start playing golf with some alumni, or like you start reaching out to some alumni and saying like, hey, I'm a pro golfer. Like, I know that you like golf, or I heard that you like golf. Would you mind playing around? Would you want to set up a round? And like that round might not lead to anything, but then you might get like an email the next week being like, hey, like I told my buddy about you, and like he wants to play golf with you. And now all of a sudden you're meeting new people, and not everything leads to something or comes back with like a monetary, you know, sponsorship, but it opens doors that were otherwise like not available. And then so through that, I have had some very generous people be like, hey, like I love what you're doing, would love to help in any way possible. And so through that, you know, you kind of like a little bit here, a little bit there, it adds up to a pretty significant amount, and it opens a lot of doors and takes a lot of stress off my shoulders being like, right, you know, like it is like I'm just gonna go play golf, right? Like a lot of guys who are stressing week to week are like, yeah, if I don't make this cut, I can't afford the next event. Like that's, it's a really tough place to be, and I feel for those guys. But fortunately right now I'm in a good position, and you know, I mean, a lot of guys on tour already say it, but I'm gonna copy what they say. Like good golf takes care of things, winning takes care of things. So if I go out there and I have a good season, then it's only gonna grow from there, and hopefully lead to more brands reaching out and more people, and you know, I'm taking it, you know, one event at a time.
Yeah, Brandon, maybe a dumb question here, but I'm, you know, given the struggle and the grind of professional golf and the journey that you're on, you know, it's blowing 30 miles an hour. It's coming down sideways. You know, you guys play whatever the weather is, right? And you got to get it in, right? So it's 40 degrees. You're freezing. You're five over in a tournament. Like, what is your why that you fall back on in those moments that are difficult? And would just love to get into a little bit of the psychology of like why you're doing what you're doing. Obviously, you've got to have tremendous self-belief and just tons of respect for you and the journey that you're on, but would love to hear you talk us through just kind of why you're doing it.
Yeah. I love golf, and I know that's kind of like maybe a silly answer to it, but it's one of those things where like I've been playing golf my whole life. I mean, I played soccer a little bit in middle school and early high school, but past 10th grade, I was like all in on golf, and I had the opportunity to play in college. I really didn't see like any other thing I wanted to do. I mean, I majored in finance, and I had buddies like junior year going like networking events and stuff like that, and they were stressing over like finding a job or like getting something done so that ready for post grad. And I was always just like, you know what, like I have the opportunity that not a lot of people have, as to like I can play golf for a living, and like that's something that, you know, like obviously when you're not playing great, like it kind of like, wow, what am I doing here? Like, am I just wasting my life? You know, like I have so many friends that live in New York, and they go out every weekend and they party and they have a great time and they're making a ton of money in investment banking or private equity. And you know, out here, like you're trying to scrape by for week to week and just getting ready for your next event. But I looked at it and I was like, I had someone who was like a family friend of mine be like, hey, like when you're 75 years old, like you're not gonna like look back and be like, oh, I'm so glad I got that job out of college and slaved away for 20 years. You know, they're gonna be like, hey, like if you went out and played golf for 5 years, even if you don't make it, like that is such a great experience to have, and like such a great like way to go about life, that if I spend 3 years out in Europe traveling and I get to see a lot of Europe playing golf, like, and then I get a job, like I still have those great experiences and those great memories. And I think that's one thing that I try to keep in mind, where it's like, even if things aren't going great, like look at the situation that you're in, and like it's just something that so few people get to experience. So like I'm just trying to cherish as much as I can. And if that leads to me being able to play like into my 30s and like make a living that way, like even better. But I have no complaints right now about where I'm at. And then I think to answer your question, like if I'm five over and you know, I'm just having a really tough day, this is something that I heard in the meditation app that really stuck with me. And I think about it a lot. It was like, obviously he doesn't talk about it in terms of golf, but he talks about it in terms of life. It's like, if you're having a tough day, like there's no reason you can't hit the reset button, like right then and there. And the next five holes aren't the best five holes you played in 6 months, you know? So like the other day I played and my lag putting wasn't great. I kept giving myself like 3, 4, 5 foot putts, and I was like, just couldn't get the speed down. Now on 18, it was you know, it was a par five. I got in two and I needed to make birdie. It was a, you know, a pretty important putt in terms of like the money games and the team and where everything stood. And like the first thought I had was like, man, my speed hasn't been great. But then I also thought like, there is no reason this can't be the best lag putt I hit in like the last month. Like there is no reason why I can't just like think about it like that. And I almost made it. Like it was like a 60-foot putt that I put like a foot. We ended up winning the hole and it was like a huge swing. And like, I don't want that to sound like arrogant or something, but I think like if I had approached that in like a negative mindset being like, my speed has been terrible. Like I just hope I get it close. I'd have like 8 feet left. But the fact that I was like, you know what? Like there is no reason this can't be the best putt I put on the ball in like this whole offseason. Like let's just take it with that approach. I think that makes a big difference. And then you compound that like one stroke here, one stroke there over the course of a week, over the course of a month, over the course of a season. Like that can be the difference between coming like fourth in the money list and like 30th. And like the guys that are like, but people don't realize even on the PGA Tour, like someone who comes 75th in the money list and keeps their card, and the guy who comes 126 and misses out by a spot, like there is not a big skill difference between those two guys. Like if you take the bet that's like, all right, who's gonna win today, and you line those two guys up, it's probably gonna be like a 50-50 split, like maybe 51-49. But at the end of the day, it's like how each person, like when things start going down, who bounces back a little bit faster, who has a little bit more experience under their belt to understand like, okay, like things aren't going great, I'm going to manage myself a little bit better. And that makes a bigger difference.
Yeah, Brandon, I have zero doubt if for whatever reason golf didn't work out, just the way that you approach life and your day-to-day, you're going to have absolutely no problems in whatever you decide to do. Unfortunately, we're not hiring right now, but maybe we'll be big in like 4 or 5 years and you'll be coming on as a PGA pro and we'll remember this. So last question, because it's crazy how fast time goes, but just, you know, we have an audience of a lot of, we call like, you know, good players, people that play at clubs, people around Minnesota that really like to play. It's always fun talking to people like you that just, you can tell, you know, the way that you talk about the game, it's a completely different level. And I know, like when we played back at your club, you play with a lot of people that are kind of, you know, just everyday golfers. I mean, what's the biggest thing that you see with, call it, good amateurs or elite amateurs that's, you know, setting them apart? And obviously, you know, they may not be aspiring pros, but, you know, what can people at those level, like myself, guys sitting in the room here, do to really advance their game? And I know Brandon joked, like when we first met, he was like, I think I piped my drive on one, and he goes, man, I was really scared, like, you weren't going to be good at all. Like, my girlfriend asked what your skill level was, like, and you had no idea. It's just kind of, it's funny, like, what can, you know, we take away and learn from, like, how to get better at this game, even if it's just for the guys that are playing a couple times a week?
Yeah, and you can't say, just don't be steeper than Mount Everest like Hagel is.
Yeah, I am Stevie PP.
That's another great question. You know, I think the obvious answer would be like get good at your short game and like make sure that's tight. But I think that's too easy of an answer. I think something that goes a long way for all people, and Jordan, I think you're like a scratch golfer, and I think this goes from scratch golfers all the way to like 18 handicaps, is like tracking your stats makes such a big difference, and people don't realize it. And it makes an even bigger difference if you're the guy who plays 3 days a week and you only have an hour and a half when you do play it, or like 45 minutes. It doesn't have to be like super intense like Decade is, but like if it's like $10 a month to get some sort of like golf strokes gained app, like that is worth the investment. Because what ends up happening is you go out there and you play a round of golf, and you're like, which happens with everyone, no matter your skill level, you're like, oh, I left some shots out there. And you may leave being like, you know, like everyone blames their putter, right? Because it's so easy to blame your putter. And you're like, oh, like those three four footers that I missed, like, you know, my 81 should have been a 78, no problem. Well, why did you have those four footers? Did you have those four footers because your speed from like, you had it 20 feet and you blew it 4 feet by? Like grinding on four footers isn't going to make you shoot better the next round. It's just a band-aid, right? It's a small, you want something that's going to like last a little bit longer. And so if you can't find a fairway to save your life, like those 45 minutes that you do have are super precious. Like maybe spend 30 of them with your driver, you know, or if you, like, I have a buddy of mine who plays a lot at my home course. He's a really solid player. He's like a one handicap. and he didn't understand why he couldn't. Like, he plays, he's retired, you know, but he plays in a lot of in our group a lot, and he couldn't understand why he was putting all this time in where he couldn't get better. He couldn't get out of a bunker to save his life. Like, if the ball was in the bunker, it wasn't getting out. It was an automatic double. And so he would shoot like 78 because he hit two bunkers greenside and took two doubles. And it's like, well, yeah, you should have shot a 74 or 75, but you keep shooting these numbers because you can't get out of the bunker. So finally I was like, why are you not spending time in the bunker? And he was like, well, I'm a good bunker player. Like, I don't really hit in that many bunkers. Yeah. I think he said like, oh, I shouldn't have hit in the bunker.
Yeah.
He was like, I shouldn't have hit in the bunker. Like, that's the issue. So I'm going to go hit a million six irons because I shouldn't hit in the bunker. It's like, no, you're going to hit in the bunker. Like, that's why they're there. They're like, they're going to be hit into. Like, that's just the problem with golf is like, you're going to miss his shots, you know? And that's what's beautiful about the game is like, you can practice all day long and you can go out there, you're going to find yourself in situations. And I think this now, that question's coming back, it's like, why golf? It's like the best thing about golf is like, it puts you in situations that you don't want to be in, and you have to find a way to get out. And I think that's a great thing about the game. And so I told him, I was like, just go practice like for half an hour every day, go hit some bunker shots. Now he's a really solid bunker player. And he went from shooting like 76, 77 to like 74, 75. And that may not seem like a big difference on paper, but when you can get out of a bunker in one shot, now you're putting for par instead of for bogey or double. And like I said earlier, you know, one shot around, people are like, oh, like, it's not that big a deal. But one shot over the course of time is adds up to be a lot.
Man, Brandon, you are an easy guy to pull for.
Yeah.
We are going to be tracking.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're going to be tracked.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm happy that you reached out. I'm glad we got to play, connect. I'm excited for your journey. I'll be texting you. Maybe you'll be wearing some Swannies. Yeah. Some MGP gear.
We'll be closely monitoring the situation.
Yeah. We'll have to follow you and really appreciate it, man. Hopefully you can come out to Minnesota when you're done with all your European travels as well.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on, and this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, congratulations, and have a great season. Okay?
Yeah, go get it, man.
Thank you. Right. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brandon. We'll see you, man.
Take care, partner.